Leftover lasagna.
Leftover lasagna.
Lasagna? No way.
It's a type of sandwich.
Some kind of gross pasta.
Leftover lasagna is a podcast by my church and Tony Uncle.
Leftover lasagna. Very funny name.
Hello and welcome to Leftover Lasagna. Say hi, Nitin.
Hello, Tony.
This is episode 5 and while we don't know what this is about, I think it is important that we explain to our listeners what Leftover Lasagna intends to do.
About time. After about 4.5 minutes. Leftover Lasagna is a, for now, weekly podcast where Tony and I pick a topic, a theme, or an event, though we haven't done that so far. And we go off on tangents and go deep and try and uncover layers. And in the process, we fuck around and find out if there is something to learn for ourselves and hopefully a few smiles to share.
Yeah, brilliant. So, I mean, while we chose the name Leftover Lasagna at random, what it sort of signals to is the fact that obviously it the acronym is LOL, which we discovered later, thereby making it a backronym. A backronym is something made up after the entire thing, right? Backronym is basically, I think you make the acronym, like CAPTCHA is a backronym, I suppose. How Venkaiah Naidu used to make up acronym. An acronym deliberately formed from a phrase whose initial letters, yeah. So basically like biodiversity serving our nation is bison, basically like that.
Anyway, when you said backronym, I didn't know what backronym meant. Yeah. I thought you're going for the a palindromic acronym. I thought might be a backronym because it's same
for LOL like that, like Nitin, but not like Tony, as we learned earlier. No, but what what I was saying was, while we've chosen it at random, Leftover Lasagna signals to the fact that it is a comfort food because who doesn't love, you know, some having some cold leftovers, especially after a long hard night, right, and probably a commute to the office in the morning. And leftover also means that it is hardly anything that's not already been said before, right? It is just us sort of discovering things that are new and interesting to us. And we sort of try to add layers to each other and build up on top of each other. That's probably the basic premise, right?
That's pretty good. And I must also add, typically pizzas and biryani, at least, the leftovers always taste better.
Cold.
They always taste better the next day. Not cold, you probably want to heat it. Oh, but you know, in biryanis, the masalas go deeper in, like, if you
stand. Of course.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, next day, biryani. Kadasila biryani. Wait till the end and then eat.
For listeners, usually, you know, one thing that is true about podcasts is that 100% of the listeners of any podcast love them. Why? Because anyone who doesn't like it is not listening to it, right? They have better things to do with their time. So I think that's an accurate stat. 100% of all listeners of podcasts love them. Except now that we've plugged the shit out of the show on multiple different places. Hopefully some of you are here from the simplified final episode recording. If not, spoiler alert, it is coming soon. but yeah, so what you can expect is really two friends who don't take each other too seriously and are generally curious and often unsure about things. But Nitin, while we've you know, known each other a long time, many people on the shared WhatsApp groups are confused if we love each other or hate each other. It is because both of us love to have a good argument, right? Good for both of us, not sure about the rest of the people around. What do you say about that?
Indeed. Yeah. Love to hate, as they say. Hate to love.
Yeah. So when we talk about arguments, especially in the internet era, it looks at sort of just taking contradictory positions just to probably shit on each other, right? And that's not the intent of an argument, at least for you and me, although people around us do get uncomfortable because along the way, in our quest for the search for truth for ourselves, we do tend to take not necessarily extreme positions, but sort of contradictory positions, right? But again, so I think from all the arguments we've had, it's probably more constructive in the way of trying to get closer to the truth by building, you know, sort of layers of argument to get closer to the proposition and then tear out each other's sort of fundamental premise and hopefully arrive
and
at
rebuild
a new
them.
One, right?
Yeah.
Tear you a new one.
As you were saying, if the aim is to try and always be the devil's advocate, because there is a very popular stance, I think that's what both of us try to do. So, in a sense, we are not just peeling off the layers of leftover lasagna, but also the lawyers. We are the lawyers of leftover lasagna, the devil's advocate. So, there you go. Don't judge us by our bad legal jokes.
The reason we've set it up like this is because today's episode is slightly different from what we've done so far, and possibly different from what we'll do going forward, right? So if this is your first episode, you know, give other episodes a chance.
And if you've heard the other episodes and you're wondering what the hell, maybe give this episode a chance. Who knows? Maybe this is what
happened. But the reason we've set up this elaborate premise is because we're going to be discussing something that I don't think both of us are necessarily sure of, but there has been lots of outrage about this on social media, right? So when we outrage, are we doing sort of like motivated reasoning, which is to say that you already know the answer, right? You already know the judgment. Like when someone tells you something, you know that this is right or wrong in your mind. And then you're trying to find excuses or reasons that validate it, right? Yeah. Which is not a great position to have. So we are sort of trying to explode this particular topic to see if there is something interesting that comes out. So what are we outraging about? What are we outraging about, which the outrage is about?
What are we outraging about when we outrage?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like what? It's a very Kafkaesque title for this episode, or you can call it Outrage Against the Machine, right? Thanks to the internet age and the way the world is shaping up, there are always two or three trending topics of outrage that seem to be in the zeitgeist. Right now, off the top of our head, there is, of course, the Zomato controversy, the vegetarian-only fleet that is divided opinion. There is, of course, the Ambani wedding, which created a lot of outrage. Plenty of outrage, but I think that's probably died down a bit now. People are for some reason outraging about Kate Middleton and the whole royal family saga as well, whatever is happening there. So there is...
And the outrage that you refuse to acknowledge, which is Poonam Pandey faking her own death for...
for some reason, that's the one that Tony remembers the most, which happened 2-3 weeks back. We have to first remind people who Poonam Pandey is and then remind them that she faked her death. And,
you know, you can't spell Poonam Pandey without Onam.
Wow. Are we available for such bad jokes?
I think we will anchor this primarily in the Zomato controversy, right? And which is that Deepinder Goyal announced on Twitter that Zomato was going to have a pure veg fleet, which would have a distinct set of delivery personnel, delivery boxes, and a distinct livery, right? Going away from Zomato's brand colors of red, this fleet would be dressed in green, right?
You can't do delivery without livery. So, yeah.
Oh, delivery. Nice. Yeah. I think the purported reason that he mentioned was that, I don't know, this is very weird. Sometimes the food that they carry in delivery boxes tend to leak. Which
clarification came later, by the way, after a lot of outrage actually already emanated. The initial announcement was just, the initial announcement wasn't too clear also, like what exactly is going to happen. Like, are these going to be dedicated delivery folks? Are these delivery folks going to be handpicked to deliver vegetarian food, etc.? The reason, at least the stated reason, is that
there is a market demand, apparently.
There is a market demand. Vegetarian food probably, vegetarians feel a bit icky about ordering food if it is coming in a box that also houses non-vegetarian food, you know.
Yeah.
And he had to clarify all this later and say that, there have been instances, and we are aware that there have been instances, it has happened to me, where food has leaked out of your bags and boxes. I'm sure we've all had that happen to us. Yeah. And apparently that puts off vegetarians because of the smell and the fumes and the oil of non-vegetarian food, which emanates and permeates into their food. So this was the given reason for the launch, which has since been rolled back, or what is the latest that has happened?
Yeah, so I think they'll still do the pure veg delivery, except that there's no difference in livery, right? Because people are not identified. But anyway, right? We are basically saying probably there are two layers to it. One is the objective layer, and then there is probably the subjective layer, because everything exists in a context. Let's look at the objective layer. Is to say a company is introducing a feature which they believe has market demand, and therefore, you know, is the outrage justified or not, basically, right? Like,
that is the very first objective layer. And and if you're living in a free market society, your first answer to that is always going to be yes. But there are gray areas there, right? Like,
so just to set it up, Zomato is also the company which I think had done a campaign where they had put out advertisements on porn sites, right? Basically, and they had like sort of tailor-made ads for porn sites. Obviously, nothing grosser than porn, but suggestive of it being, you know, placed on a porn site, right? So in that context, you know, they've always done experiments. They love to say that they're doing experiments. Therefore, it is probably consistent with the kind of company they are, right? And at least objectively, it's not a new thing for them to, in our own words, fuck around and find out, right? So, except that this was done as a rollout rather than a thought experiment, right? Because he said, like, I'm dressing up in green and going and delivering and stuff like that.
Correct. Yeah. They clearly didn't expect or anticipate the sort of blowback that the entire announcement got. That's very clear. But yes, they've always been market driven in that sense. And now Zomato is also a public company now. It's not it's not a startup anymore. It's not running on VC money anymore. It is. So my initial thought, right, when I saw this was, okay, are
there
they doing this
Appo
because...
There was Appo and then there was IPO.
IPO.
IPO. Okay,
post IPO. You could wonder whether it is, you know, there's a push coming from the promoters of the company, right? And, you know, there are all kinds of people on the boards of these companies, etc., who might be pushing down slightly regressive ideas because it conforms to their worldview. Yeah. You can't even accuse Zomato of that because it is actually a public floated company, right? Now, coming back to your question, if there is a market demand for it and it is legal, And legal is, again, a very gray thing to talk about, right? Like, you could always say the law of the land decrees what is legal or not. But we know that in different parts of the world, there are certain things that are approved by law, which are not approved in other parts, right? For instance, the sale of narcotic drugs is illegal in many parts of the world, including in India. But it's perfectly legal, like medicinal marijuana, and not even just medicinal marijuana, right? Like, cannabis and marijuana are legal in many parts of the world. So, and there is, of course, the market demand for these substances in India as well. So saying that there is a market demand and hence it is okay to have something up may not always be true. So for the purpose of this discussion, we'll stick to law of the land, right? So whatever...
So you're saying legality is not necessarily same as morality.
Absolutely. We've not even come to the morality argument, there is a market argument, there is the legal framework, and then comes the moral argument, right? And I think in this case, the first two are basically pass filters. So this one, there was a market demand, it is legal. So from both of these POVs, it is a check mark.
Objectively, essentially, I think what we're saying, I'm guessing we are in argument on this, is that eat whatever you want to, you know, do whatever you want to, pray to whoever you want to, if it makes you feel better. But just keep it to yourself, right? Like, don't, there is no higher ground in saying, you know, I'm a vegetarian or a pure vegetarian or a vegan or a believer or I'm religious or atheist or any of those things, right? If it works for you, well and good, man, like, please have it. But, you know, don't bring it onto my plate or don't push your agenda towards me, basically.
All of that is fine and we're in agreement there. The part where this starts to get a bit dicey is when you question Zomato for launching this feature, right? Because they did some analysis to say that, okay, there are these groups of customers from whom we can extract this additional surplus if we launch this feature.
So I think you brought up this point, right? What about something like a halal identification, It has to necessarily be identified that way.
Correct.
As, yeah. You know, pure veg gets identified. So in a purely objective standpoint, I don't think there's a difference, right? If you're pure veg, I mean, by all means do it as long as you're not, you know, bringing it to other people's faces or plates, basically.
Correct. So what you're basically saying is, if I were to hear you right, it's okay to have that feature on the app.
Yeah.
It's okay to have a separate fleet.
Yeah.
Where you draw an objection is in the demarcation, the visible demarcation of that fleet in a different yeah. uniform. Delivery of the delivery is the problem, according to you. If I,
yeah, so I'm saying objectively, is there something wrong with it? No. But that's when we get to the subjective part, right? And here is a question for you. Is that nothing exists in a vacuum, right? For instance, if you, Nitin, watch a movie, right, which you think is amazing, right? And you think it should be an 8 on 10. Right? And you go to IMDb and you see it is rated 4 stars, right? How much do you rate it? Do you rate it 8 stars or 10 stars?
Wow, what a question. I would rate it 8 stars.
8, okay. And counterintuitively, if you see a movie which is, you feel like, you know, 5 stars, and like you see it is rated 9 stars, would you rate it 5 star or would you rate it, I don't know, 1 star?
I would probably rate it 1 star, but there's a second level layer thing. As you asked that question, I'm wondering to myself, when was the last time I thought a movie was a 5 on 10? And I almost never feel a movie is a 5 on 10. It's either a 10, or an 8 or a 9, right. Or it's a 1 or a 2. Right?
Yeah, this is why I think YouTube initially had a star rating and then they switched it out for like, dislike, right?
Oh,
or
they
was
did?
It someone else? I think one of the... Is it YouTube or it has to be YouTube only, no? Let's...
Like a scale of 5, 10 is just needless layers.
Yeah. 5-star rating system to like, dislike system in 2009, right? So
yeah.
I guess they didn't find the value in a sliding scale.
See, the like, dislike actually gives you a lot more information, right? It gives you a sense of how many for and how many against. It also gives you never just look at the thumbs up and the thumbs down. You very quickly also check out the number next to it. How many likes and how many dislikes.
Oh,
if you see a 5-star scale, and this is a big problem when you're shopping on Amazon, right?
Right.
You don't.
You're only looking at the numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll get like 5-star ratings and it has 3 ratings. Right.
So like, I'm going to buy like our podcast has 2 5-star ratings on Spotify.
You
even
me.
By you and me.
my son who's featured in the intro and your daughter, I think both of them have child accounts. We should get them also to come and rate the podcast. So that way we'll have 4 ratings. Yeah.
Yeah, but not our spouses because they might rate it 1-star. No, but the reason I asked you this question is, to me, it's everything exists in a subjective sphere, right? And I would vehemently, if there's a rating mismatch, I'm going to either, you know, do a 10 star or a 1 star, right? To make sure that I'm counterbalancing the existing narrative to push it closer to where I feel the true mean should be.
Would you also create multiple fake accounts to then go?
No, I'm not.
So you also draw the line somewhere, don't you?
Of course, no. I'm saying the intellectual position is that you have to put in an effort to push the narrative towards where you feel that it is best placed, right? I'm not saying that this is a entirely objective argument. I'm saying it is purely subjective, and I'm saying I'm the kind of person who would take positions to push it towards where it needs to be. Right. So, in that context, there is a lot of subjectivity to what Zomato has done, right? In the context that we exist in India in 2024. One of the lies that humanity has told itself and continues to tell itself is that over a longish period of time, all conflicts resolve amicably and people are happy and stuff like that, right? Which is bullshit.
Did they say that? Who says that? Nobody says that.
I've grown up believing that on average humans are useful and better. Yeah. I mean, I've since shunned that belief, but you're saying no one says that.
No, I don't think anybody believes it. Look at people around us, right? Like, in fact, if I go back to the question of... if we go back to why we outrage, right? And maybe this was something to bring up later in this conversation, but the fundamental question of why we even express our outrage, towards things, right? There are two or three things. One is the most obvious reason you will outrage if you've had a lived experience of on a certain about a certain thing, right? Then you would outrage against it, and it is probably even justified. In fact, it is justified to an extent to say, hey, I am against this because this actually happened to me, right? I'm against cigarettes, let's say, because I saw my uncle smoke 3 packs a day and he died early. So I'm against cigarettes. I'll do everything to try and, you know, eradicate it from the world. Now, that's one kind of outrage, right?
Let me generalize your statement, if I'm understanding correctly, to or like take it forward, is to say not outraging is a privilege of the privileged, right? For instance, if you don't know that there is something is a microaggression, it means that you're not affected by it at all. Right? For
outraging.
Instance, I was having lunch with a ex-colleague, friend of mine, after a long time, right? And she was dressed in a sari. And she was basically saying, you know, I have a business meeting with someone later in the day. I wish I hadn't worn a sari. I'm like, why? You know, what's a big deal? So she's like, I mean, obviously, as a man, you won't understand. I would have been much more comfortable if I was wearing a suit. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what to say to that. Because obviously, it is not something that you think about, right? Like, you and I probably just pick out the first t-shirt that's there in our wardrobe and get comfortable with it. So her point was that not that she was not dressed formally enough. Her point was that she was dressed in a manner that could attract unwanted attention from a male business person, etc.
Yes, got it.
That
yeah,
even
yeah,
I mean, as hot as you are, Nitin, you've never had to face the consequence, not necessarily consequences. What do you say? Face the situation where you're made uncomfortable by someone's gaze or
yeah. Except actions. That one time when I went in a you know Kanjivaram to a product management meeting, but no, yeah.
No. So the whole point is that. We live in the world of male privilege where we are not aware of it, right? Similarly, so many other such privileges exist, which means that you're like, "Arey, why are you outraging, man? Like, I have never been affected by it." That is basically what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't think it's only the person who is outraged that should outrage.
No, yeah. Let me lay it out. One of the reasons why we outrage is purely because we identify with the tribe and we believe that whatever that tribe is outraging against, or whatever that tribe believes at a more basic level, is something we should also believe in, right? So we often take up cudgels against issues because that's what our in-group does. So, and I mean, going back to something that we spoke about in our very first episode, Harari has written about how human beings are tribal and how stories play a big part in making us the way we are. And stories is the interesting one, right? So if you look at the Israel-Palestine conflict, now that has been brewing for forever. I'm sure you could say that there was generational trauma that was unleashed on the Jews during the Holocaust, right?
Yeah.
And they are reacting to generational trauma and saying that they need a state of their own. And that's why they're doing whatever they're doing, right? In the Gaza Strip and in Palestine. Now,
it's
the question
a bad
is how
argument,
many people...
Okay.
No, I'm not even for the argument, right?
Yeah,
but
okay.
This is what it is. This is the story, right? So they are paranoid about having a land to themselves, which is why they are doing everything they can to secure that piece of land for themselves, right? And which is why they're doing that. My problem with it, or rather my confusion with it, is the people who are doing it right now are not people who are directly impacted by the Holocaust, but are the descendants of people who are impacted by Holocaust. And we believe that
and
it is
they're
our...
not even surrounded by the people who sort of were responsible.
Yeah, exactly. They are adversaries. The people who inflicted the Holocaust upon them are not even the people they're fighting against anymore, right?
Yeah.
Though you could argue that even that doesn't make sense after
obviously
generations because, something really bad happened to your ancestors. So what? I mean, it was bad. It was really bad for them. But you have actually survived it and come out and your parents and your grandparents were able to bring you out and... Why would you continue to hold that beef against a certain community, right? We believe that it is our moral duty to right historical wrongs, which I find very funny and strange.
Absolutely.
I mean, I totally get it if you retaliate when something happens, right? I don't get it when you retaliate after three generations.
You get it doesn't mean you agree with it, but you get it. The other one you don't get at all, is what you're saying.
No, I get self-defense, right?
Okay.
So if the Holocaust is happening,
don't turn the other cheek. That's fine.
Yeah. Don't turn the other cheek. Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand why your grandchildren would come and now bomb a completely different sect of people. But yeah, that's broadly that's what is happening, right? If you look at the Jonathan Glazer argument, you have Jews who are up in arms, questioning him, labeling him an anti-Zionist.
I know the context of what is happening in the US, right? So much so that someone who was an outspoken, any of the outspoken, like sort of liberal woke people, right? Whether it's Trevor Noah or John Oliver or any of these guys are like hesitant to say anything against Israel, right? Because they exist in a time and space where it's tough to talk about it. We can because like, I mean, obviously we can be more objective about it in that sense, right? And like, it is absolutely appalling, which is, it's probably the most hope-sucking thing that has happened in recent times is the genocide that is going on in Gaza and Palestine, right? There's no other way to put it. And it is abhorrent to think that, you know, anyone who holds up sort of like the moral high standards refuse to talk about it, right? And not just limited to US. I think even, you know, you don't see too many intellectuals in anywhere talking about it because it's not a popular opinion and they stand so much to lose because one community...
Exactly. It's because of the power position in which the Israeli community or the Jewish community finds itself in terms of how many strings they're able to pull right now. Let's not even go there. Obviously, people are compromised, right? And there are people...
No, so the majoritarian argument, the majoritarian argument is also sort of going on in India, right? So if you look at it in a cultural context, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I don't remember when Tanishq had to pull that ad down, which was basically about, you know, and you sort of looked at ads at one point as counterculture, right? Or sort of... standing up to the man, but also pushing along culture in the right direction, right? And basically, if you remember the whole outrage around that ad, which was, I believe, called Ekatvam, right? There was a inter-religious marriage, and I think the Muslim family did something for the Hindu girl or something like that, right? Something where they made her comfortable. But the existence of such a thing as a inter-religious family, was abhorrent. Outrage people and basically Tanishq had to pull down the ad, right? And what rented that day or for several days then was sack Rehan Ahmed, right? Obviously his name is not Rehan Ahmed, but I'm changing his name. But you get the point that there was this person.
Who was that? That was the marketing manager or whoever.
That was one of the, they, I mean, did a LinkedIn search, found someone related and picked up a Muslim name and basically said, sack this guy, right? And I mean, obviously, the company didn't do it. That is different. But the point is that we also live in an era where majoritarianism or righting historical wrongs has come at the expense of ostracizing minorities, doing unto them micro and macro aggressions, right? Therefore, anything, in my view, in going back to the IMDb rating, anything that comes in the way of even sort of furthering that hatred or anger or mistrust is something that I'll stand against, right? Fundamentally, it will be something that I stand against.
Absolutely. No, yeah, I think we are unfortunately aligned on this.
There are two other angles to this. One is the angle of caste, right? So I was just looking up, you know, has anyone spoken about this in a meaningful manner? And I couldn't find anything except the Hindu has a quote by Professor A.F. Matthew, right? Who was our prof in IMK. And like a whole generation of IMK and MICA students have him to thank for, you know, sort of making us aware of the casteist tendencies, which are not obvious in a B school, right? Obviously, we all come from quite a bit of privilege. We've probably fought against reservations when we were kids and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
It's not apparent. So one of the aspects of the caste equation is also food purity, right? And when you say pure veg, it's not just the same connotation as saying that I'm a vegetarian, right? There is obviously a casteist angle to it. There's a Brahminical angle to it. And obviously that just doesn't mean that you discriminate against other castes. It also means that you discriminate against possibly other religions, right? So one of the tweets from Abbas Momin, who's a stand-up comic and also a producer at IVM, was that I don't think his tweet basically said, I don't think the pure veg community will be very happy to see their delivery boys dressed in green, right? Which is
which was the funniest thing
to say.
It's not even profound, right? We are recording on the day when the IPL is starting. It's been 16 years of the IPL. And we've had, what, 12, 13 teams totally participating in this tournament franchises over the years. Yeah. There has not been a single team that has taken a shade of green in its permanent jersey. I know RCB does it once a year for the whatever power-saving that they're trying to... some other virtue signaling crap that they're trying to do. But every other team has a garish and ugly shade of blue, red, purple, and of course, there's orange, the yellow and orange. But green has been absent for obvious reasons.
Well, that's interesting. And
it's has this never struck you before?
No, every year I mean, I didn't notice, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, it's easy to notice because the first thing you notice is that three or four teams have broadly the same color. Like you have, and the reason you're doing that is because you're restricting your color choices. You're trying to try and mimic mimetically the Indian cricket team because you're hoping that fans are idiots and they will support you because you're wearing a shade that is close to them.
Yeah. But there are no green jerseys. Yeah. I mean, it's obvious. Yeah.
There are no green jerseys. In fact, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years back, there was this whole unfortunate video that went viral of a Zomato delivery boy who was eating the food that he was supposed to deliver, right? And it was caught on CCTV and it became a big thing. So these people who want veg food delivered by a vegetarian fleet, they are better off actually getting non-vegetarians to deliver that food because non-vegetarians are never going to actually stop and eat vegetarian food. Did you think about this?
This is a brave... Love it. Love it.
Credit to my wife who came up with this, Shruti Kapoor.
Amazing.
Please follow her SoundCloud. But it's also funny, right? Fun, like... No, so see, I was trying to bring this up earlier. So there are six types of vegetarians in the world, right? Broadly, and vegetarianism is also a new concept globally. There's a lacto-vegetarian who will have only milk and, you know, and not have any other forms of animal products. And the ovo-vegetarian who will have only eggs and nothing else. There's a flexitarian who is someone who is flexible with his meat eating choices depending on the day of the week, etc.
Oh, I thought they flex the fact that they're vegetarian.
Yeah, those are... garbage Indians, basically. Pescatarians who eat fish and don't eat any other forms of meat. Then there is vegan. And there is also raw vegan, by the way, who don't actually cook their food. So these are the ones that exist outside of India.
There was this headline that came which said, vegan woman wants to prove that she is strong, like anyone else, climbs mountain and dies. And the comment is, at least she died doing what she loved, telling people she's vegan. How do you know someone is vegan? They will tell
you. They'll tell you. So in India, won't eat egg except if it is in cake. Won't eat meat, but will have gravy. Jain.
Wait, what? Are you making this up or is this a real categorization?
I'm sure you know people who conform to all of these categories. I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Won't
you
eat
conform
egg.
To all means you'll eat everything. No.
As in, I know people who adhere to each one of these levels, right? Oh, won't eat egg except cake. Won't eat meat, but will have gravy. Jain is, of course, a different beast altogether. Won't eat meat on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. Will eat chicken, but without bones. Will eat chicken only. Will eat fish only. Will eat meat, but only on days when I also have a drink. Right? Each of these exists.
Oh,
now,
wait, what?
Imagine the number. Yeah. Oh, there's this old joke. Oh, this it's from a Tamil film, right? So this boy's family has come to a sort of ponnu paathufai, right? To sort of check out the girl and see if they want to get married. So it's literally what it is. The girl literally walks with a tray of coffee. It's the most regressive. It's literally, I don't know. It is checking out the entire family.
Wearing a sari, not a suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you don't want to show up in a suit. It'll be odd. It'll attract the wrong kind of attention. But there's this joke where the girl's father asks the boy, so I'm sure you must have all good habits, right? So do you have non-vegetarian food? No, 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 I don't eat any non-vegetarian food. Maybe I have eggs now and then, that's it. Oh, only eggs, that's okay. Yeah, yeah, only eggs, but sometimes I have chicken, but that's only on days when I drink. What, you drink? No, 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 I only drink on days when I feel like smoking. Otherwise, I never drink. So, yeah, this keeps escalating. By the end of it, there's nothing it doesn't do. So,
lovely.
All vices.
Lovely. Yeah, perfect girl.
Yeah. So the point is, how many fleets should Zomato launch? They will run out of colors, much like the IPL teams, because for each of the, imagine delivering cake, but you know, egg-free cake, cake with egg, but cake with egg delivery has to be separate from other non-veg delivery, all of that.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever.
You can have like, and this can be nicely married in Delhi, nice. Where you have the odd even rule, right? So on odd days, green fleet can go because people eat meat only on those days.
No, but was this feature supposed to have an additional payment, or were they just trying to steal Swiggy's market share? I don't know why it's important.
I think they didn't announce any additional payment, but yeah, that could be surge pricing. Who knows? In the future. Possibilities are endless, as they say. But the whole concept of I want my food cooked separately, handled separately, comes from car.
Going back to the pilot where he had told us about, what is it? Shaivam, Mashaivam.
Yes.
Tell us, what is the actual sort of origin of Pure Veg, and why does it exist?
If you haven't heard this in our pilot episode, so the concept of Pure Veg restaurants as opposed to just veg restaurants exists very openly and visibly, at least in Tamil Nadu, where I am from. The word pure there obviously connotes a sense of superiority. It's also a nudge, wink, wink, internal sort of signal to its patrons that this place is run by Brahmins and the food is handled by Brahmins, and we only use Brahminical sort of recipes and rituals in making the food, which means there's not going to be any kind of contamination by, you know, other sorts of ingredients coming into the food, obviously, and it is not even going to be handled by people of you know, a different strata of society or class of society. So, and then you, as the, you know, on the other side of the fence, you have the military hotel, which military hotel is a very, you know, kosher way of saying it's a non-vegetarian restaurant, because typically it was the military canteens that used to have meat, because you eat meat and you become strong and then you can become part of the army, right? It's the Kshatriya thing. Kshatriyas are the warring clan, and they are the ones who consume meat traditionally in according to the caste hierarchy. In Tamil, the word for vegetarian food is Saiva food. Shaiva Unavagam literally means Shaivite restaurant, but it actually means vegetarian restaurant. So you're, and Asaivam is the opposite, which is, you know, non-Shaivite food is non-vegetarian food. So you're literally attributing godliness to vegetarian food and the absence of that to non-vegetarian food. So I wouldn't even term that like, this is not even a microaggression, right? This is a major, major aggression if you think about it. And it exists in Tamil Nadu, which famously is the home of the Dravidian movement, right? Which seeks to destroy caste hierarchies, etc. I mean, there is enough hypocrisy in that as well. We won't go there. But this exists, right? And so to that extent, I actually buy your point that when you see an aggression or a microaggression, you have to very vociferously fight against it. Because otherwise, it becomes routine, the way pure veg restaurants have become routine. We're completely fine to call a place vegetarian, right? And but this whole pure veg thing is a microaggression, right? You're literally putting down somebody else's food choices.
It's not just that you can't cook the same food in the same kitchen. You can't use the same utensils. You can't use the same.
You can't use the same human beings to handle it.
How do pure veg people shake hands with non-pure veg people? How is that allowed?
In Tamil Nadu, this is how you shake.
Oh, that's all. So you don't shake hands.
Yeah.
That's why they don't shake.
There is a interesting, a small funny joke in a Tamil film where Rajnikanth is an absent-minded professor who's wearing dhoti and shirt in that film. I mean, we'll probably put that clip here for our viewers to see. And he's meeting someone, so that person puts his hand out to shake his hand, and Rajni does this. Yeah. And so then Rajni puts his hand out. By the time his hand reaches, the other guy does this.
Okay.
And this goes on for like a few seconds. Yes. It's funny.
growing up, you're exposed to a lot of things, mostly, you know, as a function of where you were born, right? But once you've sort of reached adulthood, at some point, you have to start questioning everything that you were told, right?
Yeah.
And move, not necessarily move away from it, but find your own truth, right? I grew up extremely Catholic, but I'm an atheist now, right? Full-fledged atheist. But that doesn't mean that I'll be against you sort of going to church or whatever. It just means that I've reached a place and a conclusion which says that, you know, logically there can't be a God that exists. And stuff like that, right? So but what is your take on this? Like, have you questioned things that were told
everything.
You in
childhood? What have I not questioned? Huh. Everything.
No, I know, but I just wanted to say this.
I've been an atheist.
I feel alone in this tribe.
At what point of life did you turn atheist?
Oh, it's a good question. I think mid-20s.
Oh, I've been an atheist since my school days. So,
wow, you're more pure than absolutely me. No, again, there's no value judgment to being an atheist, right? Honestly, at this point in time, I feel like there'd be so much benefit if I could believe in a God, because then, you know, there is a reason and an explanation for things. Right now, you have to, you know, figure out stuff for yourself and deal with it, right? And
correct.
And therapy.
Stories are very comforting. Stories are very comforting, right? There are strength. Our ability to believe in stories is our strength. And our biggest weakness. Harari Andre Sonar. Yes.
No, any other thing that you can think of that you were told as a child that you've questioned and moved away from?
Oh, the whole reservation, for instance, right?
Is, oh, yeah, exactly.
I think you touched upon a very, very good point there, because it's something that I was very strongly against, right? Especially
correct.
Going into college, right? Because
correct.
You're fighting tooth and nail to get admission. And you know that whatever your rank is, right, there is this additional handicap that you're working against in order to get a seat, which...
Yeah.
You otherwise feel that, hey, it's a level playing field, it's a race, and everyone is running. But it's not a level playing field. And I think I first started realizing that in college, where we could actually make out the difference. That's what I'm saying. Like
Hey, you made out in college and all.
Absolutely. the whole Israel-Palestine conflict, right? It's not actually correcting a wrong. Because
obviously
it is...
It
is generationally, whereas reservation is correcting wrong because it is correct.
Oh, correct. Oh, okay. Yeah,
is where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
So, because, and very often the argument that Apakas use against reservation is that, hey, this is something that happened, you know, centuries ago.
Okay,
why are you getting to benefit from reservation now? The point is, it has actually made that kind of a, even the well-to-do people who have come up through reservation, let's say in one or two generations, continue to have to struggle because of various things. I mean, they're socially still, you know,
social capital,
openly boycotted, right? Socially. And not just social capital, they're also, they on a daily basis, they are facing microaggressions, right?
Correct.
And that's not even the majority. The majority is actually people who have not even first generation beneficiaries yet.
Correct.
of the program and the policy. So, yeah, that's something that really changed, I would say, through my days in college. I mean, it's also obviously easier to say that once you're on the other side.
Yeah.
I might have been much more bitter about it if I did not, for instance, say, get into first choice colleges or courses of my choice. I mean, I don't know. So in that sense, it might be also a hypocritical take, and I'm aware
maybe,
of that.
Maybe not, right? I mean, again, I'm not proud to say this. I think one of my first published letters to the editor at The Hindu, they titled it Reserve versus Deserve, right? Where I made the same argument saying, you know, how can you sort of... I think it was when we were about to go to college that the whole OBC sort of thing came in, and creamy layer, and then this and the other, all sorts of stuff was happening. But anyway, broadly...
I mean, it's always been there.
We were misinformed about what caste meant, what reservation was, etc., etc. Yeah, that is something I've grown out of as well, definitely. Yeah. What else? Anything else that you can think of?
I mean, the whole concept of patriotism and nationhood having to wear your patriotism on your sleeve is, absolutely. I mean, I think once you start questioning one or two big structures, it's very easy to start questioning multiple of them. Right?
Yeah.
And once you question religion, it's easy to question other such constructs. And I think, yeah, correct, the whole idea of being Indian is something that I have a question, like, what does it even mean? I was born within this random border, but why should that mean anything to me or to that random border? What is that border even, right? So it's obviously there's a bit of dichotomy, because like I mentioned on in other contexts, I continue to root for India when they play cricket, while also being very aware that why exactly am I rooting for them? Like, it doesn't mean anything, right? Yeah, I don't really identify with them. So
Or in a less controversial way, like people who still identify themselves with their colleges or schools, you know, like in 35 or 40 years old. I mean, I'm a cathedral.
Yeah, if you have not grown up, did you not grow up beyond that? Like, what? I find it very weird. I find that very weird. In fact, my son, you know, typically, right, the way we name people in India, right, the second name, the Hindus, typically the second name is the caste, right, or the community that you come from. It's some kind of notifier to your antecedents, right?
Correct.
In the South, obviously, we again spoke about this in our previous episode. We are already looping back to earlier episodes. Huh? We have built that kind of body of work. In the South, it's a bit different, where you get your father's name, the patronymic surname thing that we spoke about, right? So when we had our son, there was this whole question. So I'm married to a North Indian, right? So, and she's a Kapoor, right? That's her surname. And I'm a Sundar because I'm my dad's son. There was a whole question of what do we name our son, right? What is he going to
get? Not because of your face, is it? I always assumed that.
There are other parts of me that you've never seen. But only because I'm wearing a 9-yard Kanchivaram.
Adorable pancreas. You're all about the inner beauty.
The gallbladder that you have to crack that. But, So my son, and this is something I actually feel strongly about. My son actually has two first names. His name is Milan Ved, and I also questioned why we went with Ved, because later I'm like,
is Ved a made-up surname?
Or is it's nobody. It's correct. It's him.
So
partly because I very strongly believe that he should, at no stage, especially being born in India, and unfortunately, I don't think things will change even by the time he grows up. People will continue to try and find out about you by trying to find out what community or where you hail from. And they will write your entire history in their minds before they even know anything about you. Yeah. I didn't want him to have any kind of identifiers there. So,
correct.
You know,
no, our good friend and listener, Vikas, who's recently had a baby, also did the same thing, which is a invented surname, which is actually a first name. For me, again, I was very clear that I'm not going to give my children my name as a surname, right? It's either like got to be like, you know, both of our names, which didn't make sense. Or maybe like both of our family names, right? Which doesn't necessarily have a caste implication. So, I mean, ideally, I would have liked to double barrel it. But then like putting it as Kochukudi-Kalapurakil might have led to so darkening of so many bubbles in that OMR sheet, right? I didn't want to do that. So we ended up going up with just one name, but the family name, right? Again, I don't think there is a neat compromise for this. I feel like this is a convention that should be invented. Like, how do you get a surname?
Yeah. I think going back now to episode 2, or was it 3? Why do we have conventions? You can do whatever you want, right? Name your child Madonna if you want to. Right.
Of course you can. This is the same energy with which Mallu parents were naming their kids.
Jinsi, Jibbi, Jiggu.
you know the origin of that, right? It is basically there they took the first syllable of the husband's name, second syllable, first syllable of wife's name. Like, Martin and Christina's son, Makri. Like
Marcy. I don't know what that's even supposed to signify. Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, we get it. Yeah, you two had coitus and the child came. So what? This is the zygote.
This is from Vikas. Do you know what Atishi Marlena, you know, right? From the AAP party in Delhi. Do you know what Marlena comes from?
She got beaten. Marlena.
No. It is apparently Marx and Lenin. Marlena.
Oh, okay. Very nice. So, that's very cool.
Thank you to Vikas for this.
Tidbits in leftover lasagna.
I mean, I think broadly we're saying that you know, question everything that you grew up with, right? Like, pure veg shouldn't exist in the time and place that we do, especially given that it is an upper caste construct. And by definition, you've had generations of great education, right? Or so-called air quotes education, which should have rid you of all these sort of discriminatory tendencies, right? By all means, eat veg food. No one's stopping you from doing that. But, you know, please stop wearing it as a label.
Yeah, or return your Sangeeta Kalanidhi Awards to Music Academy. For having...
You have to explain this for me and our listeners. This is
okay. So T.M. Krishna is a Carnatic musician from Chennai or from one of the cities of South.
Does he have a book called Sons of Sebastian or something? Sebastian Sons? About some tabla players? I mean...
I don't know.
Go ahead. I'll find it.
So T.M. Krishna, unlike the rest of the Carnatic music community, which has generally been, you know, Hindu upper caste, upholding the whole idea that Carnatic music is like a gift from the gods that was only given to the Brahmins, and hence something that only they can perform and even enjoy or understand. He's someone who has vocally said, music needs to be taken to the masses, and this kind of elitism does not curry favor anymore, right? So this was him only.
Yeah, this is a book by T.M. Krishna. It's a brief history of mridangam makers, and it's called Sebastian Sons. So,
I thought it's about you and Rafada. But yeah.
It should be about me and my dad. No, again.
Actually, yeah, you and your dad. You and your dad, yeah. Yeah, actually.
And Sachin. And Sachin.
Lolem.
Lolek. Okay, anyway.
Lolek.
Sorry.
Yeah, and so Music Academy, which is this institution / auditorium in Chennai, where the whole December concerts, the very famous December concerts, Carnatic music concerts that happen year on year, they confer these awards called the Sangeeta Kalanidhi and whatever. It's the, you could call it the Oscars of South Indian Carnatic music in Tamil Nadu, at least, right?
Hmm.
They have actually given an award to T.M. Krishna this year, which has angered the entire community, which has gone up in arms and said, how can they do this? He has been, he has dirtied our music by trying to take it far and wide. And he's also brought disrepute to the community. And how can he be honored? And here, take my award back. So people have started doing award wapsi to, there are these famous singer sisters called Ranjani and Gayatri who recently, were vocally... Yeah. Return their awards, and then Music Academy rebuked them and whatever. But so it's very similar to what's happening with Jonathan Glazer. So I could see the parallel there, how the entire Jewish community went up in arms saying, hey, how can this guy claim to be pro-Palestine when he is, when he's a Jew and so on. And I'm just glad when people are willing to step out of their markers, right? Markers that don't really mean anything, but have just been handed down by storytelling. And I'm glad when people are willing to step out of those markers and see the world for themselves and see where they want to play. And it's a free world, man.
At least you've understood where I come from when I say that if microaggressions or aggressions happen in a context, why I push back the way I do, right? And how I rate movies on IMDb. And
absolutely.
That's probably it.
Perfect. We are done.
That's 4 minutes. So this has been a very interesting and different episode of Leftover Lasagna. Is it a banoffee pie? Have we banoffied a new thing? Shalom Malacha.
Wow. This is the greatest hits episode, which has completely gone in a different tone. But hopefully people who are looking for insights and deep thoughts would be very happy with this episode.
Yeah, I think hopefully if you've thought along with us or like completely said, what a bunch of idiots, why don't they know
us these idiots
already? Yeah, that's okay. I think we'll still continue to do this hopefully we'll arrive at a coherent narrative of what Leftover Lasagna is, or not. I mean, why does it
happen? Yeah, I don't think we will. The next episode is going to be just jokes, for sure.
Just
I have
jokes,
no doubt.
Yeah.
Just jokes, meaning jokes about the law. Going back to justice. Liberty,
oh
equality,
God.
Fraternity.
It's like that thing where they say justice is best served cold, because otherwise it'd be just water.
Actually, cool. Revenge is best called, no?
I know. I mean, what? Like, it's not revenge, is no? What can I do?
What else could it be? Yeah, nothing else. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, amazing. So, thank you for sticking around for another episode of Leftover Lasagna with Nitin and Tony. And please share this with some of your friends so we can get some listenership going. And Nitin, serendipitously, our last episode on serendipity was followed a day later by Amit and Ajay releasing Everything is Everything.
Yes.
Called the surface area of serendipity.
Surface area. Increase the surface area to have more serendipity. As a leading podcast and as doyens of the podcasting industry, it is our bounden duty. Thought leaders in the podcasting ecospace. It is our duty to shed light on smaller shows by, you know, up-and-coming creators. So, please check out Everything is Everything by Amit Verma and Ajay Shah. Two young kids with bright eyes, great thoughts, and wonderful conversation. But really, one of my favorite podcasts/shows. It's not on Spotify. It's not a podcast. It's a YouTube show. And when it first launched, I was like, I'm not going to go to YouTube just to watch these guys talk. That's exactly what I'm doing now. Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah.
But we are available on YouTube, Spotify, YouTube Music, wherever you want it. Like, just take it and go, man. Just listen, please.
Yeah. We've increased our surface area, so there should be more serendipity.
Increase.
Please find us.
Yeah, no, but there should be a way to write to us. I think Twitter is the best, no? Twitter /Nitin/NotiTony. We'll link it in the show notes. Write to us. Yeah. Tell us what you think. Share it with friends. Let's keep the conversation going. And see you for episode 6 of Leftover Lasagna, which might be after you return from your vacation, which you're serendipitously
going on. Yeah, it's probably
going to
be a couple of weeks later. So in the meantime, please catch up on the archives. And of course, Bits and Pieces continues week on week. So there's enough podcasts from the Tony Sebastian stable of podcasts.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.